This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, release the linguistic hounds. Coming up in today's show...
If you think you're being followed, you quite possibly are.
To warm up, here's some word history. The thesaurus sounds like it got its name from a synonyms-loving dinosaur, but it comes from the ancient Greek word thesauros, meaning storehouse or treasure. From the 1590s, there were thesaurarii, early dictionaries that were treasure troves of words, but it was celebrity thesaurus compiler Peter Mark Roget who first used thesaurus as the term for a collection of words grouped together by meaning. And since it was first published in 1852, Roget's thesaurus has never been out of print. And in case you're wondering whether there are any synonyms for thesaurus in the thesaurus, yes there are, including a new word to me, onomasticon. What does that mean? It means the same as thesaurus, keep up. On with the show. What are your top five reasons for visiting a museum? Lou, gift shop, cafe, fantasy shop for artifacts I'd take home if I could get away with it. Oh, and edify myself by studying important, beautiful, or educational objects. But what's probably not on most people's list is reading the written caption description thingies accompanying those objects. Come to think of it, I don't even know the proper name for the written caption description thingies.
They're called text panels.
Thanks.
But there's a variety of text panels. So there might be introductory text panels. There may be sectional text panels. There may be object labels.
Rachel Suhami is an exhibition maker, curating and designing exhibitions.
They're the last thing that you will write or do for an exhibition. An exhibition will take somewhere between 2 and 5 years to create. Usually you're at the end of something that's been a very long process.
Are you just wanting to get rid of it?
I just want to get rid of it now.
But you can't, because there's still a lot of work to do.
So you have to think about how it is that you want to distribute text throughout the exhibition. Let's say you've got an exhibition that's over multiple rooms. For each room, do you want to have a panel that introduces that room, and then if the objects in that room are sort of divided into different related sections, do you want to have a panel for each section, and then do you have a label for each case of objects or each individual object? So you have to develop something that is called a text hierarchy. And then from there, we don't want to inundate people with text, and that makes it a book rather than an exhibition. And we know that people don't really read that much text in exhibitions.
Oh, they don't?
No, they don't.
Oh, so all this is for nothing?
The visitor tracking studies where, and this has been going on since about the 1950s at least, you sort of watch visitors move through exhibitions and look at what it is that they, where they go and what they look at and how long they spend in a place.
We're being spied on when we're in museums.
Yes, yes.
Oh, great.
If you think you're being followed, you quite possibly are.
What kind of proportion of people are actually bothering to read?
About 30%.
Oh.
So, you know, it's a bit sad, really.
Seems like a lot of effort for 30% uptake, so why bother?
I mean, it's a way of directing a reading. It's a way of saying, this is what this room is about, this is what this subject is about, this is what you should be thinking about this. Perhaps all of us, museums and the rest of society, have an idea of museums being a kind of places of authorised, established knowledge, and that if you go to those, you'll see, you know, the official version of science or natural history or art history or whatever. But of course that isn't the case. They are a version. And the interesting thing about exhibitions is they're authored, you know, they're put together, they're constructed like a TV documentary, but we're often not aware of that. It's not made explicit. The credits are, you know, buried away at the end somewhere. You might not necessarily know who's put it together. And so what you're seeing really is one person's or a group of people's view on this subject. But visitors will come with their own views and their own interpretations and their own sort of background knowledge. So it's striking a balance. You don't really want to be wishy-washy, but at the same time, you don't want to say, this is what you should think about this, because people might want to disagree with you. So I guess there's the question of how much do you want to feed someone a line on either a subject of the exhibition as a whole or a particular painting and say, this is what this is about. It's should really be, this is what we think about this.
Okay, so there's the museum's editorial standpoint, plus the mitigating factor of what the visitors might think, plus the essential facts about the exhibit itself. That's a lot to fit on a little text panel. How do you even go about it?
You have to be a journalist. So it's the same kind of principles as writing a news article in a way. So short sentences, don't be too verbose, don't be too technical. If try and explain the words immediately, also don't patronise your audience. Try and get the essence of what this panel is about in the first sort of couple of sentences. How it is that you frame an exhibition and the whole language in which an exhibition is framed and the subject is talked about actually starts well before you even come to write the text. It starts well before you actually start to write the concept for the exhibition. It comes down to things like, what's the museum? So if you're going to have an exhibition of photography and you're a modern art museum, you might talk about it in a different way than if you're a design or a historical museum. Why are we doing this now? What's the imperative? Who are our sponsors?
Does that influence the information much?
Well, if you think about, you want to get some money for something. You know, this gallery needs updating. We don't have enough money. Where are we going to go for this? How are we going to pitch this in terms of, you know, the buzzwords that will get us some money from sponsors? They might be commercial sponsors. They might be public funders. But there's still a kind of a way in which one needs to present the project in order to get money. And that will then frame, you know, what it is you're going to do and how it is you're going to talk about it.
Are there many compromises involved in that kind of situation?
There can be, and I suppose it depends on how aware you are that this is what you're doing, because there's a kind of a zeitgeist of how one thinks about subjects or museums or exhibitions. What's the purpose? Why do we do this?
Is it inevitable that an exhibition is going to be a reflection of the time of the exhibition rather than the objects in the exhibition?
Yes, absolutely. And actually, this is something to think about when you're writing text as well. If it's a permanent collection, that might be up for 10 years, 20 years. So you have to think carefully about the language that you're using. It can't be too contemporary because it's going to go out of date very quickly. So, and that's another challenge. What happens if you create this exhibition and then someone, and you know, based on what it is that you know now or what it is you think now, and then 5 years down the line, new evidence or new information comes to light that goes, oh, well, hold on a minute, it's not quite like that. You know, what do you do and how quickly can you change it? And is that just a matter of changing a text label, or do you have to redo the whole exhibition?
Sometimes there are additional linguistic challenges that are rather unexpected.
I was working for a well-known science organisation who were putting on an exhibition about genetically modified foods, and they wanted me to write some text panels about what genetic modification is. But their way of thinking about their audience was that they had a, quote, scientific literacy, unquote, of a 10-year-old, which means that we need to leave out some terms like chromosome and gene.
Difficult to write about genetic modification without using the word gene.
It took me 2 days to write 70 words of text.
Are there any synonyms for gene that are less complicated than gene?
No. So I can't remember quite what I did, but it was convoluted. It would have been much easier to be able to say gene. And I can kind of understand the fear about not wanting to use technical language, but it's very easy to introduce a term and then immediately define it in a sort of completely non-patronising way. Your audience aren't stupid.
They're in a museum.
They are in a museum.
Here's the predicament. Too little text and visitors might not have all the information they need. Too much and they might spend too much time reading and not enough actually looking at the exhibits. Is there an optimal amount of text?
I mean, it really does vary. So a place that's Tate Britain, for example, has minimal text in its new hang, whereas other places have, you know, huge amounts of text. I went to an exhibition. It was a living history exhibition, supposedly, and it was 16 panels of text and 4 replica objects.
Seems a bit disproportionate.
It was a bit disproportionate. I thought it was a shame because it's not really it's not my idea of an exhibition. It's just a lot of text, and actually, it's quite exhausting to read. We already know that only 30% of people read all that text anyway. And it's a bit dull. You want something to interact with in some way.
Well, there needs to be a reason for being there rather than just reading it in a book or on a website.
Yeah, exactly.
Did people ever sabotage the text panels, as far as you know? Write amusing things on them?
Not as far as I know, although I do know exhibitions where people have made guerrilla exhibits. They've put an exhibit in with its own little label. It's called institutional critique, which is where people will make interventions in an existing exhibition, sort of point out the deficiencies in the previous exhibitions or new ways of thinking about that collection, new histories. Fred Wilson's a really good example of that. Fred Wilson is an artist, and his most famous example was an exhibition called Mining the Museum at the Maryland Historical Society in the States. And this was a sort of old colonial house with sort of very nice fancy silverware from the sort of the colonial masters. They invited him in to make some interventions, and he went through their collections and found manacles that were used for slaves, and put those in with the fancy silver work and called the case metalwork. So what you get is this juxtaposition of fancy silver stuff and manacles. It's all metalwork. It's all from the same era. It's all from the museum's collections. The manacles previously weren't on display, but it immediately makes a commentary about not only the museum, but that period of history as well. The label for that was just that one word, metalwork.
So with just 9 letters, the meaning of an exhibit can be transformed. And in fact, the presence of the words in museums, whether you read them or not, makes a critical difference. In 1925, the archaeologist Leonard Woolley was excavating a palace complex in the ancient Mesopotamian city-state of Ur. The palace would have been pretty new when Ur was abandoned around 500 BC. So Woolley and his team were surprised and perplexed when they uncovered a room full of objects that were hundreds of years older than that, until they discovered a number of clay cylinders covered in writing in 3 languages, which turned out to be written explanations of the artifacts they accompanied. Woolley realised they'd unearthed a museum. In fact, the earliest known example of museums as we define them today. Thanks to the text, they understood that the room contained a curated collection of objects designed to preserve, commemorate, and interpret the past for viewers in the present. Without the text, it was just a bunch of old stuff. So ignore the text panels at your peril. Although sometimes the exhibitions seem to want to discourage you from reading them.
And I once saw an exhibition that had its text panels at floor level. But it's sort of problematic because you really have to get down on the floor to see them. So it's not very good if you're sort of very tall or slightly arthritic.
Was it an exhibition for snakes and babies?
No, it was an art exhibition. Huh. It was sort of hung on the wall. It was really weird. But again, I think it's that thing about we want the works to stand on their own. You know, you have to see the works and then not be distracted by the text.
But then just don't have it.
Yeah. But then people will complain because there's no text. So it's that odd thing of people don't read the text, but they kind of want it there.
As well as putting on exhibitions, Rachel Suhami produces the Museums Show Off live show. Visit museumsshowoff.org for dates of the next gigs. This show's online home is theallusionist.org, where I've been posting some of your very interesting correspondence about previous episodes. Click the Extra Allusionism tab to read it. And seek out Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter. I was pretty excited to hear from one of you who is a linguistics professor at a very esteemed university who gave one of his classes the assignment of listening to the C-bomb episode of this show, which is both very flattering and very worrying. Before we go, your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is caprine, adjective, related to or resembling a goat or goats. Try using it in an email today. This episode of The Allusionist was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, and there'll be another in a fortnight.